Welcome to the resurrection of DMOU, Destination Marketing Organization University. I am your host, Bill Geist. At the dawn of the millennium, DMOU was one of the most innovative distance learning platforms in the destination marketing organization space. During that time, we interviewed over 150 of the best and brightest in our field, as well as those from complementary disciplines, sharing innovative ideas to drive our industry forward. Alas, business got in the way, and it just became impossible to maintain a three-a-month, 60-minute format distributed on, ready, CD and cassette, how quaint. So we set DMOU aside and focused on our clients, but we never lost affection for DMOU, and we would always smile fondly when our DMO friends would remind us that they had been subscribers. Well, DMOU is back, and it's back with a new twist on a very cool idea. No more subscriptions, no more one-off CD sales. DMOU is now free. There's no more CDs. DMOU is now a podcast. And no more 60-minute programs. We'll talk with our guests for as long as it takes for them to inspire you. The new format, three questions and a bonus round. Some of these podcasts may go 15 minutes. Some could go 45. We just don't know. And that'll be the fun part of bringing DMOU back. We're charting new territory, and that's what makes DMO Pros tick. So strap in, engage those thrusters, and enjoy the ride. DMOU is back and sponsored today by Destination on the Left. It's another podcast you should be following, hosted by my friend Nicole Mahoney of Break the Ice Media. Nicole interviews destination marketers, industry leaders, and businesses in the tourism industry, exploring successful collaborations, creative marketing ideas, and best practices. You can find Destination on the Left and more on Break the Ice Media at where else? BreaktheIceMedia.com. And you can find over 100 of her podcasts on iTunes and other podcast platforms. And now on to our show. Our guest today returns. He was one of the originals in the first iteration of DMOU. It's Amir Elan, president and CEO of Longwoods International, one of the most respected tourism-centric research firms in the world. A 30-year veteran of the travel and tourism industry, Amir joined the Longwoods team in 2015 after serving as vice president of partner engagement with Brand USA. Prior to Brand USA, Amir served as director of the Ohio Office of Tourism. He has also served as executive vice president of the Ohio Hotel and Lodging Association and sales and marketing manager with the Steuben County Convention and Visitors Bureau in Ohio. He has been recognized with a number of industry honors, including the top 25 extraordinary minds in sales and marketing from the Hospitality Sales and Marketing Association International, also the Ohio tourism industry's highest honor, the Phil Sherlock Award, and the State of Ohio Distinguished Service Medal. Amir holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in political science from the University of Dayton. And Amir Elan, welcome to DMOU.
Thanks, Bill. My pleasure to be here.
So it's down to two cats with political science degrees from Ohio colleges. So how did the two of us find our way into destination marketing with a poli-sci degree?
Yeah, no kidding. For me, I fell into it as I was in my undergrad years getting a job to help pay the bills. Became a airport shuttle van driver and bellman for a Ramada Inn by the airport.
Wow. And that sounded like a lot more fun than hanging out or being a lawyer, right?
You know, my number one job was taking care of all the airline crews that we had staying at our property and taking them wherever they wanted to go and doing whatever we needed. So it was really tough when I used to call my buddies and saying, hey, I got a group of flight attendants that want to go drinking after after I get off shift. You want to go?
And so the stories you could tell, or is there still a moratorium on those stories? Because some of the people are still...
Are you kidding? It's me. It was a very PG life.
Okay. I'm not sure I believe that, but I'm sure there are some great stories back there. So let's get started. Number one question. Let's start from the moment that Longwoods went from being more than a research firm that nailed the economic folly of Colorado's shuttering of their tourism department back in the 90s, because I think that's what you were always best known for. Take us forward to becoming an advocate for the efficacy of destination marketing with a much broader view. Tell us about the halo effect.
Ah, the halo effect, yes. Well, you know, I'm just celebrating my fourth anniversary with Longwoods International. And just as I was coming on board, we acquired the talents of one of my esteemed colleagues here, a gentleman by the name of George Zimmerman, former state tourism director for both Ohio and Michigan, more famously known as the architect of the Pure Michigan brand. And as destination marketers, George and I have been friends for many, many years, and we've always had this debate in the bars talking about, you know, destination marketers, we've known that it's no secret. People like to live where they like to live and work where they like to play. But there's never really been any direct science, direct correlation to that, at least that we could find. And so when George joined Longwoods a few months before I did, he kind of brought an interesting example to us, which basically said they've noticed a few things after the launch of the Pure Michigan campaign. After a couple of years, they started seeing a lot of second home purchases along the lakes in Michigan from people from New York and the East Coast. And that's a really interesting thing when you think about it. There's a lot of lakes and a lot of shorelines on the East Coast that one could purchase.
Yeah, so why Michigan?
Yeah, why Michigan? Why Michigan? So there was something there. So that conversation led to a little test case for us. So we decided to check things out and see if we could apply a little science for it. So we picked about 9 destinations, various size states, cities, even a couple, even 1 or 2 regions that were clients of ours, and said, would you mind the next round of research we do for you guys? We add a few more questions to our image batteries that we put consumers through. And they said, sure, let's try this. So we started looking at asking people questions about their image of these destinations, not just for tourism-related activities, but also for economic development activities beyond visitation. So we asked questions like their image of the destination as a place to live, as a good place to start a business, to start their career, to attend college, to retire, to purchase a vacation home, etc. And we found something really interesting. And it was a correlation that was exactly the same across the board. And we've since replicated this for literally dozens upon dozens of destinations. And we see it all the time. If the destination has a good marketing campaign, and by good, you know, it's a subjective term, but an effective marketing campaign, if they have some good frequency and reach and some decent messaging out there, what we've seen is there is a much higher lift in the image of the destination for all these economic development factors than from those who are aware of the marketing and from those who are unaware of the marketing. And we're not just talking, you know, a 10, 20% lift. We're talking 50, 60, 80, almost 100% lift in the image of those who strongly agree that that destination is probably good for all these other economic development factors. Then we also asked folks about their visitation of the destination. Have they been there within the last couple of years? They've been there recently. And we saw a similar type of correlation. Those who had visited the destination had a much higher image of the destination for all those economic development factors beyond just tourism than those who hadn't been to the destination before. But the sweet spot that we found, of course, was if they saw the marketing and they came to the destination, their image of that destination to find a job, to start their career, send their kid to school, retire, whatever those factors were, was across the board pretty much triple digit growth.
Yeah, and that's just amazing. And you're taking it from the percent growth over the original likelihood of a yes answer to, is it a good place to live, good place to start a career? We have flipped it. When we take your information out and replay it in front of audiences and DMO boards and pretty much anybody who will listen to us to try to communicate the power of destination marketing, we go the different direction. We say, okay, so, and I take Wisconsin as my home state as one of the examples. The first question is it a good place to live? And 30% of the respondents said, yeah, sight unseen, never seen an ad. We think Wisconsin is a pretty nice place to live, which means to me that 70% of Americans don't think that Wisconsin is a good place to live, and that's a problem. And after you show them the ad, every one of the destinations went up between 10 and 15%. Every single one. And so, you know, I point to North Dakota, and, you know, I love North Dakota and got great friends there, so this is not a shot. But, you know, people kind of scratch their head and they say, even in North Dakota? And I said, those Josh Duhamel ads work. I said, look at the numbers. They've gone from 22 to 47% on likelihood to want to, you know, visit, to live, to start a job. And it's powerful, powerful stuff. You know, we talked recently, and he'll be a guest hopefully in the next month or so on DMOU. We talked to Spiro Battistatos of the South Shore Visitors Authority, which is in Northwest Indiana, just abuts against the South Side of Chicago. And it was the halo effect that got his economic development people revved up to say, hey, let's invest in Spiro's program and let's put together a Move to Indiana campaign based on the fact that you got to get people here to visit, and they'll see it and they'll find out that it's less expensive houses, less expensive taxes, quicker commute to downtown Chicago than the west side of Chicago. So it really, the halo effect is playing out all over this country as economic development experts begin to get hip to what you have finally proven. I mean, I think, yes, as you said at the beginning, this was always a gut feeling that we all had. We all believed that a visit would inspire something more. I mean, Maura said it all. It all starts with the visit, when she did her famous speech 10 years ago at the Destinations International Annual. So congratulations and thank you from all of us in the industry, because this has finally, I think, created that moment in time where destination marketing, economic development, community development, all of it begins to coalesce.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I've been spreading the mantra, you know, meeting with so many destinations and their various stakeholder groups, that, you know, the DMO really is the brand manager for the entire community, for all phases of, like you said, economic and community development. And we're seeing more and more destinations embracing that. And like that great South Shore example you just gave, beginning to invest in or jointly with their DMO in terms of accomplishing some of those other activities.
Yeah. So hard to believe it's been 4 years since the halo effect was unveiled, I think, in Austin at Destinations International. So question two is, in the past couple of months now, you've launched a brand new initiative, and it's the Resident Sentiment Study. So tell us why what residents think matters and how DMOs can employ this tool, and tell us some of the results that you're finding. I mean, what are the key takeaways that you have learned, and what do DMOs need to be doing differently as we go forward?
Yeah. Well, as excited as we were to roll out the Halo Effect research, I actually think we're more excited about this new phase of resident sentiment research, because this is really kind of turning tables on what we as a company have been used to for literally almost 40 years. We've been talking to visitors about travel. Now we're talking to residents about their thoughts and their attitudes and their sentiments towards travel and tourism. For us, it kind of started, you know, our clients conversing with us, occasionally calling up saying, hey, you know, I've seen a lot of buzz about this term over tourism. Do you have any data on it? Tourism and sustainability, we have some concerns going on here, tourism and the environment, or, you know, issues about local funding and promotion of tourism, you know, issues that we've all been hearing about, reading about, talking about, discussing for several years, nothing earth-shatteringly new. But the more we looked at it and the more we started doing academic searches and other literature searches on these various topics, we saw that nobody really had done any kind of national benchmark here in the U.S. in terms of what is the American residents' sentiment towards tourism in general on a lot of these key issues across the board. So we fielded it last summer and got some really interesting stories. We did a representative sample of the U.S., whole cross-section of the U.S. population. Now, these conclusions, let me tell you, again, they're general. Obviously, certain regions or certain communities where they might have certain issues there that they're going through. You know, I'll guarantee you answers for people who live around Yellowstone might be different than people that live right here in Columbus, Ohio, for example, where I'm sitting today. But generally speaking, we saw some really interesting things. And we partnered up with Destinations International since then to make this research available to all of their membership. And actually, anyone can get some highlights off of it off our website, but the Destination International website. But we published a recent white paper on this and some interesting takeaways. First and foremost, you know, for all those destination marketers out there, there's a very strong support amongst residents for tourism, growth in tourism, and even the funding and promotion, both at the state and local level, of tourism marketing and promotion. So that's kind of that's a great thing. On the other side of it, though, most Americans really don't see tourism as a direct contributor to their personal income. So while they feel very supportive of the industry and the job that DMOs are doing, they may not feel very engaged or the urge to be very engaged in issues when it comes to funding issues, et cetera, because, you know, again, they, for many of them, it's like, it doesn't really affect my pocketbook. That's not taking into consideration the indirect impacts, right? But directly, they're not seeing it. In terms of the environmental issues, most Americans really believe the benefits of tourism growth outweigh the negatives. They see it much better that tourism growth, especially if it's managed, can, you know, have much better impacts or lesser impacts on the environment and other sustainability impacts than other forms of economic development. We also found that while folks are generally supportive of tourism and growth in tourism, they generally don't mind more visitors coming to their backyard. Again, I'm generalizing for the whole country here. We did find that there is definitely an underlying, you know, yeah, we want them to come, but we don't want them to stay here. Not in my backyard, you know, type of right. Mentality there. That was definitely there. But there was one thing that we saw that should give a lot of destination marketing organizations some pause for concern and maybe kind of thinking about their strategy moving forward is most Americans really feel that when it comes to tourism issues in their backyard, whether it's anything from, from development of a new waterfront project or convention center or hotel development to other tourism related issues, they really believe that they were not engaged or consulted in the process. They really don't feel that they were well informed or had the opportunity to provide their input or feedback. And when you think about it, and as we talked to some destination marketing organizations about it, when we saw those initial results, you know, we kind of got a lot of nodding and agreement saying, yeah, you know what, you know, when these projects are happening, there's lots of communication happening amongst and between the, you know, the stakeholder, the investors, the stakeholders who control purse strings, those who approve permits, you know, the local elected officials, city leaders, whatever level of government you have to go through in there. And then, of course, those within the tourism community whose business impacts or benefits directly around within. But, you know, the local citizenry are often left off that engagement schedule or engagement plan, you know, beyond the surface, other than, you know, the DMO putting out the press release once a year, hey, here's our economic impact from the prior year, or here's the state of the industry, blah, blah, blah. There's not a lot of ongoing communication engagement.
Interesting. And we should probably have seen that coming.
Yes.
Because that's usually when there's a problem in anything, not just in tourism, is limited or bad communication.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting, the DMOs that we work with that are struggling with their industry partners, with their hotels, their attractions, and their restaurants, it usually is because they've not been communicating well to them.
Right.
And it just take that. And I mean, it's an instant fix. All you have to do is be intentional about making sure that everybody is on the same page and that you're communicating a lot. And I think we look around the country and every one of the DMOs that we say that's best practice right there, it's always at the root of it, a fabulous communication plan with at least their partners, and more intentionally with, I think we now see, with the citizenry as well.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is we were able to take this research a little bit, you know, one level further too, because we had a big enough sample, we were able to profile who the naysayers were. You know, it wasn't unanimous support. There are haters out there. And the haters had a very striking profile. They kind of fell into, they had some common threads between them, and then they kind of split into two categories. The haters tend to be, you know, they're generally negative about most aspects of their life or aspects of anything related to government, and, you know, society and so forth. They also tend not to travel very much which is interesting. But then we found one other subset of the haters, and there's one subset group that really, they came to the destination on a visit, fell in love with that destination and moved there. And now they don't want to.
And lock the door.
They're doing what they did.
Lock the gates.
Lock the gates. It's my little secret. But the profile of the, generally speaking, the profile of the naysayers are often those groups that, you know, there's always that group of citizenry that's at every city council meeting, right? Or every county commission meeting and that. And sure. Usually have something negative to say about something. Listen, you may never get this group to agree with whatever the plan or the issue is that you're trying to push forward. But at the end of the day, if you don't engage them in some form or fashion, you don't give them an opportunity to have a microphone or sit down with you, you are giving them the biggest ammo that they have, and which will spread the perception of the negativity, because you and I both know, Bill, the media loves a good soundbite.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are always sitting at those city council meetings. The media is always looking for them to give a great soundbite on the 6 o'clock news. And if you engage them, the one thing they can never say is, well, this happened without me knowing about it. Nobody sure. told me. Nobody told us. You know, government's sneaking behind us, or the private sector is trying to pull a fast one on us or whatnot. And at the very least, if you do nothing else, that's a core reason to have to include that group in your engagement strategy.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a two-pronged strategy. We've got to have a strategy for, as you call them, the haters, and make sure that we take the "you didn't listen to me" or "you didn't tell me" away from them, because then their argument becomes a little less gravitas, if you will. But I think also making sure that the people who are maybe just in the middle, ambivalent, don't really understand, that they better understand what we do, so they can't be lured into the hater camp, because it's that group in the middle that can sway so easily. We know the people who get it, who love us, will fight with us or fight for us, are going to be solid. It's that middle ground. That's where we have to put a lot of effort into explaining, because this is not an easy industry to understand.
Right. And to your point on that, the DMO often shouldn't be the mouthpiece leading that message to educate those that are kind of in the middle, right? It should be those in the community who understand and benefit indirectly from the tourism economy in their backyard. That should be those ambassadors. If you've got leaders in the healthcare system, the banks where the tourism businesses do their business, the local attorneys, those that aren't necessarily seen as a direct part of the industry, but understand how the tourism fits in with the fabric of the local economy, they should be the ones that should be turned into ambassadors and leveraged to help spread that message and educate those who are on the fence.
Yeah, there was a video 20-some years ago from the Texas Travel Industry Association that the opening talking head was the mayor of Arlington, but his real job was he was a car dealer. And he says, I'm in the tourism business. And people go, how's a car dealer, you know, in the tourism business? And then they show three parking lots at like Six Flags and the ballpark. And he says, these are the employee lots. He goes, I sold a lot of those cars. He goes, I'm in the tourism business. It was masterful.
Exactly.
All right. So we will find a way to get a link to that white paper into the show notes on DMOU. But elsewhere, where else are people going to be able to find more information on resident sentiment?
So obviously on our website, longwoodsinternational.com, you can it's longwoods-intl.com. You'll be able to get an overview of the national study. You can download the white paper there. It's also on the Destinations International Advocacy and Research tab on their website. You can get information there as well with the white paper. Also through our partnership with Destinations International, if you are a local or regional destination marketing organization or even statewide and you want to take a pulse check on resident sentiment in your community, there is an opportunity for you to participate in a program that will also not just give you your pulse check, but benchmark you against what's going on in the national scene.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Again, your both resident sentiment and halo effect are huge in our ongoing need to communicate the value of what we do. So question number three, you're a researcher. At the end of the day, you can go home knowing that you have delivered your data. What keeps you up at night?
Lots of things besides a teenage son and a daughter off in college, right? You know, the things that keep me up at night from a research perspective is, yes, you know, we may be able to deliver great data to our clients. I think the thing that keeps me up at night in relation to that is how our data is used or not used. I think a lot of destination marketing organizations have organizational structures that don't have a dedicated individual or team whose job is to help take the analysis of the data and apply it into practice. You know, we live in an age right now where there is so much access to data. You know, we do survey research. There's big data analytics. There's so many other tools out there. And every week I see and learn of some new tool and whatnot. And, you know, some are applicable for some folks, some are not. And I was on a panel a few weeks ago where the moderator asked me a question related to this and used the term, you know, paralysis by analysis. Right. You know, there's so much out there. How do you make heads or tails of it? How do you use it? How do you apply it? That's a challenge right now. I think DMOs of today and tomorrow are going to need, they're going to need to have some type of data analyst on staff whose job it is to work with the data suppliers and turn these things into actionable insights. We find ourselves more and more at Longwood in a consultative role. We're really trying to adapt and become more consultants than researchers because our clients don't have those resources internally. It's not enough just to give them the report and say, here's a few things we noticed, here's a few things we recommend, and so forth. It's about helping them take that conversation. Okay, we recommended that. What does that mean into your organization? How could you apply that? How can we, you know, what have we seen done elsewhere, or connect them, you know, with folks like you, Bill, you know, that kind of, you know, that can help them write the game plan and so forth. So in destination marketing world, when, you know, 20 some years ago, when every destination started developing their websites and then a few years later, when Facebook and Twitter and all these social media platforms started evolving, you know, new positions were created for social media marketing within DMOs. Now it's not just one person, it's usually several people within, depending on the budget size of the organization, right? And they integrated really fast with that. But even though data has exploded on the scene, I don't see a lot of new analyst positions being created out there. Mm-hmm. That keeps me up at night. Take a report and put it on a shelf. What good is that data if you just put out that's great. You know, if you get a visitor study and you put out a press release saying, hey, we got X amount of visitors and they mean this much in spending to my economy and so forth, that's great and that's good and that's worthy and you should be communicating that. But if you don't take the data that underlies that and say, okay, how do we go after the highest value visitor? What are the marketing cues that we're given here? What are the opportunities that lie, or what are we missing out on in there? If you're not using that, why bother?
Yeah. And while I think that you are wise to be concerned that so few DMOs are moving into having their own analyst be able to be there day in and day out, crunching numbers and coming up with, you know, more applications for the data, I will say that it's getting better. DMO Pros maintains what we believe to be the most robust job board on the planet because we source from like 11 other places. No membership required like a lot of the job boards. And so we're reproducing everybody's jobs. And I got to tell you that I am seeing more and more research positions show up on our board than I did last year or the year before. So I hear you, brother, but I think,
I agree,
especially for the larger bureaus, we're beginning to see the realization, just as people saw the realization that we just can't have social being handled by the marketing person. You actually have to deploy more resources. I think we're going to get there.
Yeah, I think we will. But, you know, again, it's happening in the larger bureaus. It's got to happen more in the smaller to mid-sized bureaus. But in the meantime, too, Bill, I encourage a lot of our clients and a lot of the people we talk to also demand that your suppliers collaborate, right? You know, we find ourselves in all kinds of collaborative conversations all the time with, you know, folks that are in parallel lanes of data and research with us and looking at, you know, we have mutual clients and looking at solutions that can help overlay that data, can help triangulate the data for our clients. I'm not a big data company. Why would I have any problem exchanging information with a big data supplier to one of my clients, looking at our stuff together and saying, hey, can we make this easier for our client? And I think that's something that DMOs, you know, if they don't have the budget yet for the staff, they immediately start demanding from their clients.
Well, I think it's another opportunity for us as well to partner with economic development, because oftentimes the questions that we have and the data we need is very similar. And so, you know, why pay for it ourselves? Let's go have these. Let's get some other partners into the room and find a way to fund something that everybody in the development sphere in our communities can take advantage of.
And Bill, you're absolutely right with that. That is something that we find more and more, that our initial calls that we get from destinations when they have some questions that they're looking for some research to help answer, more and more we find that it's not just the DMO, but somebody from their local regional economic development agencies on that initial call as well. So they're crossing that bridge. And yeah. I think that really bodes well for the industry.
Great. All right. Time for the bonus round question. Anybody who follows you on Facebook knows that you are one of the biggest foodies on the planet.
Oh, gosh.
So your question, tell us how this culinary sophistication evolved and give us your top three restaurants that are must experiences in your mind.
How I became a foodie. Okay. Well,
and thank God you have, because every once in a while I get to tag along and you amaze me every place you take me.
You know, being in the travel industry for 30 years, you know, the hardest question people ask me what my favorite destination is, it's actually what my favorite place to eat is, right? That's my, because there's so many amazing experiences out there. The first part of your question, I think my culinary appetite, so to speak, was opened up when I was a child. You know, I emigrated with my family when I was very young from Israel to the U.S. And my father had a job which allowed him to travel regularly all over the U.S. And my parents, you know, being new to this country and so forth, they thought nothing of pulling my sister and I out of school and taking us, you know, to see this great new country we were living in and soon would become citizens of. And everywhere we went, you know, they taught me to try the local fare, try everything, you know, try anything once. Don't wrinkle your nose at it, so you tried it. You tried it once, you don't like it, but you should try everything once. And I think that was kind of the roots of
even lima beans.
Even lima beans, let me tell you. I was 12 years old the first time I was eating sushi. When, you know, I'm old enough when sushi was, you know, when I was 12 years old, that was a really new thing in this country. So that kind of was my base. And then, of course, being in the travel industry for 30 years, we're blessed to be able to go to all these amazing destinations, large and small, and being able to travel the world a little bit, but mostly across North America. And you know, I've always loved going. We're looking for the local experiences. You know, Bill, you've been with me, and finding something that, you know, yeah, there's the popular that you got to try, and then there's also kind of the off the beaten path I like to look for as well.
So your top three?
Well, so more like my top 300, but. I will say right now, since you're holding a gun to my head here, the most amazing experience I've recently had, and it really jumped up to number one, there is a restaurant in Toronto called Don Alfonso 1890. It's a tasting menu only type of thing. It's an Italian restaurant. They have two tasting menus every night. One is protein based. The other one is vegetarian based. And you pick which side of the menu you're ordering from, and you have no say in it other than if you want it paired with the whatever wine selection they have in that. And the things that their chef is doing is just blows me away. So if you're in Toronto, try Don Alfonso 1890. There's my plug for them. In terms of, let's go steak-wise. Right now, my favorite steakhouse in the country in recent years that I've sampled there is a place in Nashville called Kane Prime. I don't know if you've been there in your travels down there.
I have, yeah.
Just exceptional. Just an exceptional experience overall from start to finish. They don't miss a beat there and really doing great things there. But then, you know, I think for my third restaurant, I'm going to give you, instead of third restaurant, indulge me. Let me give you my last meal on earth, right? Today, if today was my last meal on earth, I'd want the like my starter to be a plate of hummus from a little place in Jerusalem called Pinati, which literally means the on the corner. They make the perfect plate of hummus right there. I want my entree to be a perfectly cooked hamburger from the Thurman Cafe. I know you've been there with me.
Oh yeah, I thought Thurman was going to sneak in there.
Yeah, Columbus, Ohio. You got to have your Thurman burger if you're ever in Columbus, Ohio. They're huge, but so perfectly seasoned and moist and delicious. It's unbelievable.
Sensational.
And then my dessert is also coming from Columbus, Ohio. There's a restaurant called G. Michael's, and I want my last bite on this planet to be a bite of that lemon ginger snap tart that they make for dessert.
And I have been there as well. I concur. Yeah. I haven't been to the Jerusalem place yet, though. I'll work on that.
I'll take you.
Okay. And you're always ready, willing, and able with a recommendation for anything culinary anywhere you've been. So while you reach out to Longwoods International for your research needs, find out where you need to be going to eat, either in your town or somewhere that you're going to be traveling to soon. Amir, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule for this podcast. Always fun to share great stories with a great friend. And I got to say thank you again on behalf of the industry for all you do for us. The information, the data, and just the way of thinking about data that allows us to tell our story better puts us all in a much better position. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Bill. It's a pleasure to be on here.
You bet. That's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers that we are back and looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website, innovative ways to tell people where to go. Thanks again to our sponsor, Destination on the Left, another podcast you should be following. It's hosted by my friend Nicole Mahoney of Break the Ice Media. Nicole interviews destination marketers, industry leaders, and businesses in the tourism industry as she explores successful collaborations, creative marketing ideas, and best practices around the country. You can also find Destination on the Left and more on Break the Ice Media at where else? BreaktheIceMedia.com. DMOPros.com is where you will find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more, including our video testing service for DMOs called DMO Vision. That's DMO Pros with a Z. The executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time. saw the realization that we just can't have social being handled by the marketing person. You actually have to deploy more resources. I think we're going to get there. Well, I think it's another opportunity for us as well to partner with economic development, because oftentimes the questions that we have and the data we need is very similar. And so, you know, why pay for it ourselves? Let's go havesies. Let's get some other partners into the room and find a way to fund something that everybody in the community development sphere in our, sphere in our communities can take advantage of. Great. All right, time for the bonus round question. Anybody who follows you on Facebook knows that you are one of the biggest foodies on the planet. So your question, tell us how this culinary sophistication evolved and give us your top three restaurants that are must experiences in your mind. And thank God you have, because every once in a while I get to tag along and you amaze me every place you take me. Yeah. Right. Even lima beans. Yeah. So your top three? Yeah. I have, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought Thurman was going to sneak in there. Sensational. And I have been there as well. I concur. Haven't been to the Jerusalem place yet, though. I'll work on that. Okay. All right. Well, and you're always ready, willing, and able with a recommendation for anything culinary anywhere you've been. So while you reach out to Longwoods International for your research needs, find out where you need to be going to eat, either in your town or somewhere that you're going to be traveling to soon. Amir, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule for this podcast. Always fun to share great stories with a great friend. And I got to say thank you again on behalf of the industry for all you do for us. The information, the data, and just the way of thinking about data that allows us to tell our story better puts us all in a much better position. So thank you so much for that. You bet. That's it for this edition of the Resurrected DMOU. Tell your friends and peers that we are back and looking forward to sharing, as we said on the original website, innovative ways to tell people where to go. Thanks again to our sponsor, Destination on the Left, another podcast you should be following. It's hosted by my friend Nicole Mahoney of Break the Ice Media. Nicole interviews destination marketers, industry leaders, and businesses in the tourism industry as she explores successful collaborations, creative marketing ideas, and best practices around the country. You can also find Destination on the Left and more on Break the Ice Media. At where else? BreaktheIceMedia.com. DMOPros.com is where you'll find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more on all of our services for DMOs. And I'll do that one over. I completely decided to botch that. DMOPros.com is where you will find links to the Z News, our knowledge bank, videos, blogs, and more, including our video testing service for DMOs called DMO Vision. That's DMO Pros with a Z. The executive producer of DMOU is Terry White, and this is a production of DMO Pros. I'm your host, Bill Geist. Until next time. All right, and we are out.